This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a new natural product from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response: elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation, and zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is an all-natural, science-based formula and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Well, welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about the genetics of COVID-19. With an expert. She's Dr. Sharon Hausman-Cohen. You've heard her here on Intelligent Medicine Podcast before, explaining the concept of nutrigenomics, how our genetic codes can prompt us to deploy certain nutritional strategies using specific agents at various times to address perhaps our Achilles heels genetically. And she's really done a very, very remarkable thing in just the few weeks that we've been coping with COVID-19. She's done a very, very extensive search of the genetic literature to look at some of the implications of our genes on potential outcomes. We know some people fare very poorly with COVID-19. Other people seem to be virtually asymptomatic. Some of that, it is believed, has to do with genes. Some of it has to do with lifestyle and exposures and whether you're obese or you have comorbidities. But your genes may be a predisposing factor. And one of the theories, and this is a relatively simple gene that you've looked at, is something called the G6PD gene. And there's been some speculation that people who have problems around that pathway may be more prone to the adverse effects of COVID-19. That's a very prevalent gene, up to 10% in Spain and Italy. They're really taking it on the chin. It also can occur in African Americans, to a lesser extent in Caucasians, perhaps more in people from an Asian or Mediterranean background. But it may be an important gene, not only for susceptibility to COVID-19, but also for our selection of strategies, right?
I think that that second factor, selection of strategies, it comes into play more in that using chloroquine and Plaquenil, which is hydroxychloroquine, which there was a study out of France that was a small study, but still gave us something of an opportunity to look at a strategy. We found there was benefit in some of the patients with COVID-19 of having a shorter duration of illness and less severe illness when they got these anti-malarial drugs, but those drugs should not be used in individuals with G6PD deficiency. So I think that where I see G6PD deficiency genes as being beneficial is kind of being having caution if you are treating a high-risk ethnicity if you don't know their G6PD status before you give them anti-malarials.
So another one, and I know you've looked at it, and this is an object of some fascination for doctors analyzing this, is the genes that have to do with angiotensin converting enzyme. We know that hypertensive patients, patients who have problems with that pathway, and some of them take ACE inhibitor drugs, angiotensin receptor blocker drugs. The question is whether these drugs are beneficial, whether they're harmful. There are actually some clinical trials of an ARB, losartan, for treatment of COVID-19. But are there natural therapies that can sort of mediate that pathway and make it less likely that the virus is going to hitch a ride using these those receptors?
Well, I think that one of the issues with COVID-19, so the ACE2 has been a lot in the news, but there was just a study that came out literally a few weeks ago, and they looked at the genomics of individuals, and they did not see a correlation between their ACE2 levels. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons for that is there is another strategy, something called furin, and you can enter the cell as a COVID virus via this kind of spike protein furin or with the help of ACE2. And so cell entry by coronaviruses does involve, you know, binding to these receptors and then membrane fusion and then being taken into the cell. And so the ACE is definitely involved in that. Losartan may actually, so having losartan, which is an ACE inhibitor, may actually be somewhat of a protection because it can block some of that, that going into the lysosome. But having, you know, more less ACE inhibitor receptor, I mean, ACE receptors is more of a theoretical issue because there's this alternative pathway and it hasn't shown to be particularly.
So the virus can do an end run around that in effect. So it's right. Not, and it's not so dependent on that pathway. Okay. But so a lot of people have made, big story around that, the ACE2 receptors. And, I just read a recent article, on it. I think it was from just a couple of days ago in, New England Journal of Medicine. And even the conventional doctors just don't have a handle on it. You know, they're saying, well, this is very interesting, but we're just not sure where to go. You know, should we withhold these medications or should we give these medications intentionally? It may be that the medications, I mean, certainly the bottom line for patients with hypertension, don't stop your meds.
Right. And there was a very well done review of the topic by a nephrology and cardiology national organization, and that's the conclusion they came to. But there are options when you're talking about inhibiting entry of the coronavirus into the cells. Addressing furin pathway is a really interesting natural pathway. And the furin, again, relates to that spike glycoprotein. Mm-hmm. And you may have heard of something called
the crown on the corona. I mean, those things that everybody knows has that image now indelibly in their mind. It's those spiky triangular things on the outside coating, right?
Right. And have you heard of andrographis?
Yeah.
And andrographis is a really, I think, a very important player for people at the first sign of getting coronavirus and potentially for high-risk people for prevention because it's known to inhibit lots and lots of different types of viruses, whether it's, you know, herpes or hepatitis or H1N1 flu and even Epstein-Barr. But it looks like from early studies that it has been involved in inhibiting COVID because it affects that furin. And so this can really decrease the infectivity of the virus and the replication, but it also works on some of those pathways we talked about in the last half in that it decreases inflammasome response. It decreases that CCL2, that chemokine that calls in the damage to the tissue. And also you may have heard about IL-6 in the news with regards to coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time.
Well, it turns out that one of the strategies that the coronavirus uses is it actually directly makes more IL-6. Mm-hmm. And so it causes more inflammation on its own and triggers. And when you get really high IL-6 levels, you also get almost an allergic reaction being triggered. Mm-hmm. And so the andrographis is something that I have used a lot with my patients. I've had them take Sambucus if they're going to the store, if they're going, you know, to somewhere where they might have potential exposure because it's really safe and it decreases viral replication and kind of helps on some level. But then if they think they're starting to get symptoms of coronavirus or any virus, they start to feel a little achy, maybe a little fever, or maybe they're just having a day where they're worried. That's where I use a combination product that will have andrographis, elderberry, and another one called astragalus. Sometimes there's a couple other things mixed in there because that has even more potent antiviral. And I will tell you, I have not actually had people testing positive in my practice because of what we've kind of set up as a prevention strategy for all of our patients. But I've had people that were certainly very, very highly suspicious. A woman in her 20s who is a consultant had been traveling between San Francisco and Seattle 2 days after getting home, decided to come home and shelter in place with her parents here in Texas. Retrospectively, they didn't necessarily fully appreciate that.
Right.
2 days later, like, she comes
Mom,
home with
Dad,
100.
I'm home.
Right. Mom, Dad, I'm home, and now you can all be sheltering right. at home with me while I have 102 fever and no flu, you know, negative flu test, negative strep test, respiratory symptoms, very corona-like.
Yeah.
We started her. It was a Sunday, of course. I couldn't get her coronavirus testing. Started her on this combination. I used Viracid, which is a combination of astragalus and andrographis and
some echinacea in there.
Yeah. Different things, little vitamin A, which can affect it. And within 24 hours, she felt a lot better, 48 hours, tons better. By the time we got her coronavirus tested, it was negative. But when you're using a lot of antivirals, the coronavirus nasal swab is only 75%
accurate. There's, there are probably a lot more people out there who've had it. And so many people say, I swear I had it, but then I got tested and I was negative. It's like, that doesn't mean you didn't have it.
Right. Right. And well, interestingly, a week and a half later, which still is within the incubation period, her mother came down with bilateral conjunctivitis, and then which can be sometimes associated with coronavirus.
Yeah.
And wasn't responding to the eye drops her eye doctor gave her. Mm-hmm. And a day or two later started having respiratory symptoms, started her on again this strategy with all of the astragalus and andrographis, and we used some resolvins in there and sambucus. And again, she was feeling lousy when she came to test, and she was negative, but we'd already started her on again all these antivirals. And then within 24 hours felt so much better, and within 48 hours almost back to normal. And so I think that what we need now is to have somebody do studies. And I do have a colleague that is in academic integrative medicine, and he is actually applying to get permission to do some studies. But that's what we really need now, is studies in a controlled setting of people who start to have symptoms using these natural antivirals, because this would be a great strategy. And some of these are relatively inexpensive, easy to obtain. And then we would be able to, as a country, move forward and say, here is something we can use as a prevention strategy, here's something with the treatment. And that would be my goal, is that people now use the information that we're getting by, wow, this works on some of these genes, this works on the coronavirus, let's get more studies of this, these natural products, so we can better target them for our patients.
Wow, we're absolutely on the same page. I think we need to do more intensive studies, and on a maybe less ambitious scale, looking at some of the more conventional nutrients. I know that one of my colleagues, you might know him as well, Dr. Jerry Mullen, he's at Johns Hopkins, has just proposed some studies looking at levels of vitamin D and A and zinc in patients who are sick in that Baltimore region, and doing an intervention trial with some of these nutrients when patients first get sick. I think that's going to be very, very crucial. Another nutrient, and you know, you've mentioned it before in your webinar, melatonin. And melatonin appears to work on some of these pathways. Is there a genetic clue as to who should take it, or is it one of those general things like chicken soup? It wouldn't hurt.
Well, there are some genetic clues, but there's also some clues like gray hair. The reason I say that is, so melatonin does work it can help with decreasing what's called NF-kappa beta, which is with that master inflammatory pathway and inflammasome activation. And there's some genes called NLRP3 that relate to that. So people who particularly make more inflammation because of their NLRP3 genes may benefit more. But one of the things we know is that babies, which is partially why they sleep so long, have very, very high levels of melatonin, and that melatonin levels drop significantly by, you know, many hundredfold by the time you are in your 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s. And if you look at the curve of melatonin production compared to the curve of who gets COVID, they're almost opposite curves. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that is you can do is, if you are in that second half of a century, or even in your 40s or above, I tell people you can bring up your melatonin levels with a very small amount of melatonin. So to bring your levels up to a healthy antiviral level only takes about a half a milligram melatonin at night. It also, melatonin has been studied in other viruses. They studied it in H1N1, and it also helps IL-10. And we haven't really talked about IL-10, which is another gene, but just like there's genes that increase inflammation, there's genes that decrease inflammation. And unfortunately, they gave interleukin before a lot of them, whether they're good or bad, but IL-10 is the good side of inflammation. It dampens and decreases inflammation.
It's sort of like checks and balances in that immune system. It's very complicated.
So I think that, yes, you can look at your genomics if you have them. And if you happen to be not good at making IL-10, or you have more tendency towards inflammation, that's a good indication. But if you just happen to be, you know, we know that in general, many, many people are at risk for coronavirus. It's a very contagious virus. And so if you happen to be 40 or above, you're going to have significantly lower melatonin levels. Well, so just kind of to put it in order of magnitude.
I'm curious about where the gray hair connection comes in, because melatonin, melanin we know is the pigment. What's up with that?
I was just thinking, as a nice way of saying, if you're old, my kid, people don't like to be called old, but one time you get 50 and you're getting gray hair, it might actually relate, who knows. But if you kind of have melatonin levels in a young child, so a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old,
very high,
and they're order of around 120 picograms per mil in their blood. By the time you're in your 30s, it's down to about 40. And by the time you're in your 60s and 70s, it's down to about 5 picograms.
Here's another circumstance where melatonin, I just learned this, where melatonin is high, is during pregnancy. And a very interesting study, right out of Columbia Presbyterian here in New York, they routinely screen women who come in for delivery for coronavirus now. And last month, they screened a bunch of women. And what they found, to their astonishment, and these women were asymptomatic, except for two of them. Two of them had low-grade fevers, but they weren't very, very sick. They weren't coughing. They were just, you know, had low-grade fevers. But the vast majority of them were fine. 13.9% of them tested positive with a PCR nasal swab for coronavirus. Now, admittedly, this is New York, and a lot of these people came from, you know, the Bronx and, you know, uptown New York, you know, which are neighborhoods that are particularly hard hit. But these women were asymptomatic, and they were about to deliver. And the concern was, you know, are they going to be spreading that within the hospital environment? So they tested them all routinely. They didn't suspect they had coronavirus. But what that suggests is that, man, this is really prevalent in the general population. But that maybe the fact that these women were pregnant, something about pregnancy, maybe the melatonin levels made them relatively asymptomatic.
I think that's a great theory. And definitely there have been some studies, and there was one that was published in 2016 where they were looking at melatonin and how it affected acute lung injury and decreased lung inflammation in general. For other, you know, obviously at that time it wasn't a coronavirus, but because of its relationship with these inflammasomes. And so maybe they just got kind of mild viral symptoms. And a stuffy nose during pregnancy is pretty common. But that would be a really interesting, an interesting thing to look at, because absolutely higher melatonin stops that inflammatory inflammasome reaction, which could benefit the lungs based on what we're seeing in the literature.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. There's never been a more important time to ensure your immune system is operating at its peak. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a new natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation, and zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors who were with us throughout this coronavirus crisis. And now back to our guest, Dr. Sharon Hausman-Cohen. A couple of other nutrients that you've been tracking. There's so many, but you've also zeroed in on sulforaphane and curcumin and also oregano. Do you have any take on how they work based on your insights about the genetic pathways?
Yeah, so sulforaphane, there was a study with sulforaphane. Now, the study with sulforaphane that I'm going to tell you about was a combination, though. It was sulforaphane with maitake mushroom, and that's okay. Important.
That's because that's another category, the the mycelial extracts, you know, from mushrooms.
Right, the beta-glucans. But sulforaphane itself is a very good anti-inflammatory. It decreases, again, that master inflammation pathway, that NF-kappa-beta. And sulforaphane's been shown to benefit in detox, you know, cases, you know, getting rid of mercury and pesticides and with cognition and lots of other things. But when it's combined in this particular immune study, it was combined with maitake mushrooms, which are rich in something called glucans. And beta glucans are found in either yeast or mushrooms, and they boost your immune system. So the combination of boosting the immune system with the beta glucans or the mushroom glucans and decreasing inflammation may be very beneficial. It has not yet been studied, to my knowledge, in coronavirus. There was a study, however, in a very lethal strain of flu in mice, and this strain of flu virus was so lethal that 100% of mice would die from it. Wow. And what they did is they gave them, yeah, that's pretty lethal.
Yeah.
They gave one group, you know, placebo, and the other group they gave the sulforaphane with maitake mushrooms. And it was the combination that is in, that where it's the sulforaphane with the myrosinase, what was developed by Johns Hopkins. And they found that only 40% of the mice that got the sulforaphane with the maitake mushrooms died of the lethal flu compared to 100%. So we don't have studies yet in coronavirus, but it is something I do have actually a lot of patients using for a variety of reasons, because, again, of the brain benefits, the inflammatory benefits. And I certainly, what I've done is say switch from the plain. We use a brand called Abmacol, which was the Johns Hopkins brand, but switch from the plain to the Abmacol Strength to the one with maitake mushrooms, because then you can get that extra boost to your immune system.
Yeah. And so there's also talk about curcumin. We know that curcumin is a wonderful general anti-inflammatory. That's probably in your arsenal.
Yes, and curcumin and sulforaphane have a lot of overlap in terms of their effects on inflammatory pathways. Again, I don't have any specific studies with curcumin on coronaviruses, and I think we'll get, you know, we'll obviously get different ones. I do think we should also talk about vitamin C, Ron, because
yeah,
I know that people are using it, and I want people to realize that the studies used with vitamin C, there were some studies in China using vitamin C with coronavirus. It was really, really high vitamin C levels.
Yep.
So that's not my go-to for coronavirus. It's absolutely fine. It's certainly an important part of the immune system and can help decrease, again, inflammasomes and inflammation.
Just make sure you're not deficient in vitamin C, because scurvy or, you know, pre-scorbutic states can render one susceptible to infection. Okay, we get that.
But if we're going to try to mimic studies done in other countries, I think it's important that we look at the dosing, because there have been vitamin C studies done in China, but they were using 12 to 24 grams IV. And so I know some of the New York hospitals have started to use IV.
A little bit, you know, 1500 here and there, you know.
Right. And I think you can't say, oh, if it doesn't work, it may help, it may not. It's not repeating the China study. So I think we have to be careful too when we look at studies, I personally find that most people get GI intolerance with super high vitamin C. So if you're in the hospital, IV vitamin C may be something they consider, but I think outpatient, some of the things like the quercetin and other things that can decrease the inflammasomes that we've been talking about maybe a little easier.
And just a program note, we're going to do an entire podcast on the subject of intravenous vitamin C with our go-to expert on that next week. So stay tuned for that. I wanted to ask you about resveratrol, because resveratrol does have some bona fides as an antivirus, a viral, and it's sort of, I think it's in the category similar to quercetin, right, in its activity?
Yes, but I'm not sure. I mean, it definitely has some anti-IL-6, so that would be kind of a general, because we know that IL-6 is one of the things that coronavirus makes more of. I'm not sure if it has specific antiviral actions itself. So the ones that have the specific antiviral would be the elderberry, the andrographis, and the melatonin, not exactly directly, but can affect the immune. But the resveratrol can help with the probably decreasing the inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm. Working on NF-kappa B and the mTOR pathway and sirtuin pathway that, you know, is associated with the damaging effects of aging. You know, perhaps, you know, we have a model that under these circumstances is sort of accelerated organ destruction or aging.
Right.
Have we left anything out of your armamentarium? I think that pretty much covers it, I think. But so what's the take-home message? You know, these are some things, these are some plausible options for you. You can actually get a little bit more of a guided preventive program through modern techniques of genetic analysis. Let's give a shout out in terms of your resources. First of all, you have a medical practice. Do you do telemedicine from Resilient Health?
We are only licensed in Texas, so we are not doing telemedicine except for, my license is only in Texas. But I can, for patients who do want to work with a doctor doing integrative or functional medicine using genomics, Intellix DNA can let you know what doctors in your area have this tool and are using this tool. But my goal really here today is really to help people across the country with the research that I've done, because I really believe if we pay attention to how these different viruses enter the cells, what causes the inflammatory storm, and that people have some of these natural products, and I have no affiliation with any companies that sell natural products. But if they kind of have this is what I'm going to do as my prevention base, and then this is what I'm going to do if I start to get sick, we can keep people out of the hospital at much greater rates. And so I actually encourage patients, think about having something like Sambucus at home. The main people who need to be, or elderberry, the main people who need to be really careful with any of the stuff we're talking about is anyone who has autoimmune disease needs to work really closely with their own physician. You might not want to use elderberry, for example, on a regular basis in that kind of case. But that's a good thing to take if you're going out for a baseline prevention. But have some of these other things like andrographis and astragalus, especially andrographis, and also beta-glucans at home to use at the first sign. The reason I don't have people take andrographis every day is there have been some cases of serious allergic reactions to andrographis. Mm-hmm. And using it every day, you might predispose. That one actually can be used by people with autoimmune disease and even has been shown to have some benefit. Make sure you're getting proper levels of vitamin D, zinc. Perhaps, again, if you're at a little bit higher risk and you don't think you have proper levels of zinc, for a little while, for the next month, taking zinc with quercetin so you get better absorption. Vitamin A also can help with some of these antiviral pathways, but you don't want to overdo it on vitamin A. So you need to be, pay attention to that. Having stuff at home, maybe having some of the Resolvins, which can be a little bit more expensive, but can decrease that inflammatory storm for if you start to get symptoms. So really my goal and why I was so happy that you asked me to come and speak is I've seen such great responses. And again, I have a small practice. I haven't had anybody get seriously ill, and I have had people that were highly suspicious in their 60s and 70s, again, mm-hmm. that started to get the respiratory symptoms, get the conjunctivitis. And this strategy has worked really well with my patients. I can't be the doctor to anyone listening. I do want to make a disclaimer that I'm not giving direct medical advice. I'm telling you some of the research so you mm-hmm. can talk to your own doctors about it. But I think that if what our country has not really embraced as much as many other countries like Germany and Asia is the benefit of natural products for prevention and even for sometimes treatment and in keeping people healthy. And so I am a very classically trained doctor, as you said, and I absolutely use medications. And in fact, there was a physician in Texas who recently was very proactive with his use of Plaquenil that I think in a nursing home that got coronavirus that really saved that nursing home. They ended up, because of how he handled it, with using testing and then using Plaquenil when appropriate. He had, in a nursing home where everyone's in their 80s mm-hmm. or 90s, not one person go to the hospital with 35 positive coronavirus patients.
And that's all we can hope for is that, you know, without a definitive cure for this, is that we, in a very intelligent way, deploy the resources that we have using an intelligent medicine approach, the best of both worlds, to keep patients well. And you certainly exemplify that. That's one of the reasons I love to get your input, because, you know, your academic training is impeccable, but you've also got the spirit of a naturopath in embracing natural approaches and nutraceuticals that are science-based. So
absolutely. And so again, the genetics just helps you know, are you someone who doesn't make vitamin C well? Are you someone who doesn't make vitamin D well? And it would be good to know. It takes about 6-8 weeks to get genomics back. So you may not, if you don't have it now, you're not going to know for this immediate crisis, but it helps you to get to know yourself better. But I think we all just want to, as physicians trained in integrative and functional medicine, empower our patients to learn about themselves and be able to help keep themselves healthy the best way they can.
Indeed, knowledge is power. Thank you so much, Dr. Sharon Hausman-Cohen, for joining us, and all the best to you, and you know, stay safe down there in Austin, Texas.
Thank you, and you guys stay safe in New York. I think that right now Austin looks really great compared to New York, and I hope that hopefully New York is making a turn and will be back at having good health all across the country.
Here's the consolation prize. Many of us may have already been exposed, and that may turn out to be a bonus as we emerge from lockdown. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.